Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A little later on today's program, we'll take a look at St. Louis's vibrant music scene. It's a town well known for its music history, but we'll look at its exciting present. We'll begin, though, with the year's-end examination of the top business stories of the past 12 months. It's been a big year with a couple of blockbuster corporate deals and a coup for St. Louis, which won a two-state competition to remain home to an important federal agency. Joining me to review the year are two St. Louis Public Radio reporters whose beat includes business news. Joining me in studio are Maria Altman and Wayne Pratt. Thanks, guys, for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Hope you had a great Christmas, and now it's back to work, right?
Absolutely. Early this morning, back to work.
Yeah, very early for you. I don't envy you that. Maria, let me start with you, and Wayne, chime in on this, if you will, if you maybe have a difference of view. Is there a one big business story for 2016?
Wow. Well, I think Monsanto is really a big story, just in the sense of a history, a long, long, almost 100-year history here in St. Louis, and a big, big acquisition. I mean, a lot of money on the table, $65 billion. And so I think that that kind of stands out for me. But obviously, there are a lot of other things, you know, that happened too. The NGA choosing to stay in St. Louis is a big deal as well. Peabody Energy filing for bankruptcy was, you know, pretty big story too. So those are probably the top three, I'd say, for me at least.
How about you?
I agree with the Monsanto thing. And maybe when you strip away all the numbers that are part of this deal, and the numbers are mind-boggling, the fact that the Monsanto name may go away by the time all of this is said and done, I find very interesting. Another story that I did a lot of work on this year would be the steelworkers, U.S. Steel over in Granite City, and the plight of the steelworkers. We recently got some good news that some of the jobs are coming back. There seems to be some optimism that more will be coming back as next year goes on, but we're still in a wait-and-see mode.
They've had a tough time over there trying to sort all of that out. A lot of people are hurt by the steel industry's situation here, no question about it. Let's go back to Monsanto for a bit. It's a done deal, but it's not a done deal. I mean, there's a long way to go before this thing is really finalized, assuming it's going to be finalized. Mm-hmm. Is there any reason to think that it might not be?
You know, from what we're hearing, I know that when the shareholders voted a few weeks ago and I had an opportunity to talk with CEO Hugh Grant, he sounded extremely confident that it's going to move forward.
And but he would.
You know, right. It makes sense. You know, the argument is that there are that Monsanto and Bayer are very different companies. Monsanto, obviously, seed traits. Bayer, more on the chemicals side. So that there's not so much overlap that would throw things out. But yeah, I mean, you know, we've got the U.S. and Europe and China and Brazil, and there are a lot of places that have to sign off on this. So, you know, there could be a surprise there.
It's 30 jurisdictions where Bayer will be applying for antitrust approval. And we say jurisdictions because the European Union is one of them. And as we know, several countries make up the union. So that can't be easy. And when you say there's not a lot of overlap, that is true. But some analysts, when they really delve into it, have found cottonseeds and cottonseed traits to be one area. And Bayer officials have hinted that they are going to have to divest some interest into there. And also, there seems to be an overlap with Bayer's Liberty product with Roundup. And that could be a big holdup in several countries to see what the plan is to do, what the plan is with those products if this does indeed get to a point where it could be approved. I wouldn't say it's a done deal yet, even though the shareholders from Monsanto have signed off on it. I think the next few months will be very interesting. We're supposed to have a regulatory filing from Bayer this month, I believe, in the U.S. to basically to the watchdogs. That might be interesting to see what's in there, give us a clearer glimpse of what we might be in for over the next 6 months.
If I remember correctly, the Bayer stockholders don't have to sign
they
off
don't.
On this.
That's right.
So that's, I suppose, helpful to one degree. Another thing that occurs to me that could have an impact on it is the European Union and what's going on within that complex now. I mean, that's changing rapidly after Brexit, and now a lot of these political moves to the right in some of these countries could have an impact.
Right. And I mean, I think GMO is something that is much more difficult in Europe than it is in some other places, even including the U.S. So, you're absolutely right. That could be a little bit more tricky for them.
I think the GMO thing is another possible stickler in this whole deal, how that gets handled in Europe and all the applications that will have to be made and the hearings and so forth. That's going to be a very interesting aspect of this.
Genetic modification is not beloved everywhere, needless to say.
No, it's more – if I understand it, Maria, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to be more accepted here than it would be overseas.
I think in Europe. Europe, it's a sticking point for sure. And you know, the U.S. Definitely has detractors from that as well. But, you know, I think in other places like Israel, for instance, it's just an absolutely accepted part of – of food production at this point, so
as you would know,
yes,
from firsthand knowledge,
she gets all the cool assignments. You know,
yeah, that was a nice one.
It was. You know, going to Ireland and Israel was an interesting combination. Of course, I went along with a couple of groups, bioscience groups from St. Louis, and had the opportunity to report from both Ireland and Israel on what you know opportunities there were for bringing companies based there. Into St. Louis and maybe some opportunities for St. Louis to get companies there too.
It's just a relatively short period of time since you've been there, a couple of months. But has there been any action that you're aware of?
You know, I was thinking about that today. I have not heard of any new companies, but there was in the bioscience realm, of course, the Plant Science Innovation District with the Danforth Center, Helix, Bridge Park. They just announced within the last few weeks the branding of it, 39 mm-hmm. North. Mm-hmm. And there, you know, there's going to be a new building within that area, and it's going to be similar to what Cortex is here in St. Louis. So I think that that's a big step forward and will be very attractive for, you know, scientists and trying to get startups to locate here in St. Louis.
And Cortex, you mentioned it, seems to be going great guns. I mean, what an attribute that has been to this this community. It's caught the attention of people in a lot of different parts of the country.
Right, right. Yeah. And we could, you know, within that, Cortex just announced, well, not just announced, but the City Foundry project with the Lawrence Group, which would just be east of IKEA. And it's like 14-acre area, and they're talking about taking the old City Foundry and turning that into like a food hall, cool retail place. Yeah. And so, you know, the first part of it, the $134 million project, and so we'll see where that goes. That could be pretty cool.
You know, these figures just roll off our tongues.
Like they're nothing. Yeah.
Let's talk. $65 billion you let out a little earlier there,
right.
without an eyelash. Baby.
Well, I'll up the ante and talk about $1.7 billion. We talk about NGA. I mean, to me, both of you selected Monsanto as the top story, but NGA has got to be right near the top.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, a $1.75 billion project. Yeah. It's the biggest. You know, I talked with economic development officials in St. Louis all the time, and they say, hey, it's the biggest project we've ever had. So it was incredibly important to keep the NGA here in St. Louis. They won out over land near Scott Air Force Base. It'll be, you know, about a year from now, early 2018, the city will hand over that land to the Army Corps of Engineers and construction will begin.
You have a story today saying that this process is now starting and it will take about a year.
It will, because there's a lot the city has to do. They've got to demolish all the buildings that are on the site. They need to do any environmental cleanup. They have to sort of clear utilities. So, yeah, they have to flatten the area exactly, you know, for the Army Corps so that they're coming onto a clean site.
Did we find it as a surprise when that decision was made, considering the proposal near Scott Air Force Base and how that land had shaken out compared to everything they have to go through here? Was it a surprise at all that North St. Louis won out, do you think?
Well,
sorry,
it depends.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No. I mean, I think it depends on how you're looking at it. Politically, no, it mm-hmm. was not a surprise. I think the city was pretty. It was pretty clear it was going to come to the city from a standpoint of logistics. Yeah. I think it was a little surprising. I think it would be an easier place to build in Illinois. But, you know, they talked a lot about the NGA. I spoke with NGA Director Robert Cardillo a few months ago, and he talked about recruitment and also the working with places like Cortex, Washington University, St. Louis University, even access to the airport. So, you know, there were some other reasons to keep it in the city, you know, beyond just keeping 3,000 jobs here.
There's a political component to this, too, because President Obama was in on this, as I understand it, wanting to have access to a working working staff, as for lack of a better word, here, and have it an inner city kind of situation, which is
well, a commitment from the federal government to keep federal jobs in the city. I think that that has been something that, you know, has been talked about a lot, and this was sort of, you know, following up on that. But then again, you know, President Obama's from Illinois, so you could have made the argument he would side with that side of the river. So,
another going back to the corporate world here, another big story was the Anheuser-Busch, InBev, and SAB Miller story. Yet another huge merger, Wayne.
Yeah, and the dollar figure on that is escaping me as I was taking down notes to prepare here.
65 in the area, 65.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
It's
I think that went as we expected, because we knew heading into this year that this was going to close and a bunch of labels were going to have to be sold. And I guess the significant part of that aspect here in the U.S. is that the Miller label, and hopefully I don't goof this up because all these names kind of jumble in your mind after a while. The Miller label was sold to Molson Coors, which was a deal that was dependent on the AB InBev deal, you know, closing. Yeah. And they got that done. And then I believe it was like 4 minutes after they announced that closing, the email came out announcing the Molson Coors Miller deal. And then you have to shake out all the other labels in Europe. One of those deals was just announced last week. That was part of the regulatory process in Europe to get this cleared. It gets more and more confusing the layers you go underneath it. But we haven't seen any job cuts that we know of that from the people that were here, not from when everything started pulling out a few years ago. But we haven't seen any job cuts that we know of yet here in Missouri. The company told me around the time that this closed that they were not anticipating that at this point. But that is something to watch as we head into 2017 to see how that shakes out.
The famous word redundancy in those jobs that's happened before. I wonder if well, we've talked about this on the air. Maybe it's changed significantly since this Monsanto deal about the loss of jobs here at Monsanto. Is this likely?
I think, you know, what Bayer has said and, is that the crops division will be here, you know, for the entire company, will be headquartered here in St. Louis, and North American headquarters will be here in St. Louis. So from the standpoint of researchers, I don't think that there will be a loss. You know, there's going to be redundancies, right? We talked about that. And I mean, I think you're going to see that in the upper levels or IT or what, you know, those kinds of positions. So, yeah, we will see. I think some people will be shed. Now, from the innovation standpoint and from the startup standpoint, I know that there are people who are saying this is going to be great. They're going to be executives and people with a lot of knowledge who want to start their own companies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it'll be a net gain, because we also know that there are going to be some researchers who come from Bayer, some other sites in the U.S. to St. Louis.
I think North Carolina was the one that was identified. Right. Some researchers from there will be coming here as part of this deal. Everything that I've read and everybody I've talked to seems to be upbeat somewhat at that point. Now, of course, they need regulatory approval, so they're going to sound upbeat at this juncture of the deal. But the research jobs, I think this will be continue to be a very strong research hub for a combined company. And I think that's one of the reasons why the local leaders are very upbeat once again about this deal and how it could impact our region.
Don't you love the language, though? I've got to take a break when they talk about redundancies and synergies and things
synergies
like that.
Synergies is the other
what
one,
What they're
really
talking about is lopping people off the
exactly.
payroll.
Exactly.
Creating problems. Let's hope that if they do that, that these folks find jobs and become entrepreneurs and help make this scene an even more vibrant community. Got to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking with Maria Altman and Wayne Pratt of our St. Louis Public Radio staff, and we're talking about the business year just ending. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Maria Altman and Wayne Pratt. What about the development front? You know, Maria, I have not heard too much about the Paul McKee project. It pops up every once in a while. It's still ongoing, but not getting as much attention as it once did?
Well, I think the one project that is happening for sure is the Greenleaf Market. It's a grocery mm-hmm. store, and then there's going to be a gas station that's at 13th Street and Tucker. He has, been able to, I think it was about $2.5 million in TIF financing was approved by the Board of Aldermen for that project. And so that's moving forward. I can't tell you right now when they expect to break ground. There's also an urgent care facility within what was the Pruitt-Igoe site mm-hmm. that I expect to hear something about that. I mean, he's talked about it often. It's going to be a three-bed urgent care center, and so I'm waiting on that. He's also talking about housing.
Is it still at full throttle? Is it as it was a year ago in terms of planning and projections?
Well, I think the fact that the NGA is yeah. moving into North St. Louis mm-hmm. really will help him get some of these things off the ground. But we'll see. It's been slow going. I mean, the original yeah. TIF was passed back in 2009. Obviously, he was dealing with a Great Recession. He got through the lawsuits and things were re-upped in 2013 in terms of the TIF. And, we're just looking at the first development.
Neighborhood still on board or partially on board? Or
yeah, I think that's a little bit hard to say. It kind of depends on who you talk to. I think that if he can get the housing units that he wants, I think it's like something like 500 housing units, and he's working with a group that's out of Washington, D.C., that could be very interesting, infill housing and providing a place maybe for some of those maybe NGA employees. That might be a stretch, but the area certainly could use some new housing. I mean, there's a lot of old housing stock that if you drive up there, there's lots and lots of gaps and vacant land. So new housing would be good.
Wayne, everything seems to revolve around TIFs and tax breaks anymore. I mean, we're looking at a couple of projects now that are very very heavily involved in all of that. You talk about a new soccer stadium. You've got Ballpark Village and other things that, if you don't get the TIF, you don't get the tax break, it doesn't happen.
And it's been that way for a while. Before I came here, I covered some business stuff in Indiana, and it seemed like every deal that went down there was some sort of tax break that was involved, and I'm getting the same impression here over the 2+ years that I have been here. This soccer stadium, reading the tea leaves, I'm not sure if this is going to get done. We have a couple of deadlines that are coming up.
Right.
And I don't know if they're going to be able to get the ducks in a row, so to speak, to meet these deadlines. I believe there's one with the Board of Aldermen for a filing deadline in January, and then the MLS wants a clear indication if the financing is in place for a soccer stadium, I believe, by the end of January. So I don't know if this is – initially I thought, yeah, this is going to be a done deal. They're going to get it through. Now I'm not too sure.
Well, I think the fact that Governor-elect Eric Greitens came out so strongly opposed to the state tax credits put a damper on this, although anybody who was paying attention to his campaign would have guessed that he was not going to be supportive of tax credits for a soccer stadium. But that $40 million that they were looking to get from the state, I don't think that that's likely to happen. The $80 million that they're asking from the city has to go on the ballot. And from what I was talking with Rachel Lippman earlier today, and she said January 24th is the deadline for the Board of Aldermen to pass a bill to get that on the ballot.
I think there's a certain element of sports stadium fatigue in St. Louis.
You might be
as well.
Absolutely right.
And soccer is very, very popular here. And there's, obviously such a rich history. And so perhaps if this had come up rather than the Rams, I don't know. I think maybe there would have been success. And maybe there still will. I think it's hard to know for sure. But, I think taxpayers are maybe a little skeptical, especially seeing what happened with the Rams.
You talk about a rich soccer history, and there is that, but there's been a number of failures too, particularly indoor soccer, and they've tried a couple of things. It just hasn't really taken off, surprisingly, because of that history. Everybody talks about it, but it hasn't really quite gelled.
I'm actually working on a longer piece now that we're hoping will air next week or late this week about some of the history of soccer in St. Louis, and the old NASL team, the St. Louis Stars. I've talked to a few people that were associated with that, and they all agree that the main difference this time around is a soccer-specific stadium. Without that, there's no way it can be successful. If you look at the markets where professional soccer in the U.S. is now successful, Kansas City, Columbus, just to name a couple of examples, it's that soccer-specific stadium that has put them over the top. So that's really the linchpin of it all. If another top-level professional soccer team is going to come here and be successful, it's that stadium or bust.
Yeah. Well, we had that facility out in Fenton, too, that the soccer – I really don't know what the status of that is now, if it's being used for soccer. Or, I haven't heard it mentioned or talked about, but it was – I guess Anheuser-Busch built it to encourage its use as a soccer venue, but I haven't heard much about it.
I think that they dealt with some flooding, but I think it is back in use.
I see. And I'm not enough of a – USL team plays. I'm not 100% sure. I've driven by it a few times.
This is where my sports knowledge gets me in trouble because I don't pay that much attention. But, you know, what I do think is that the Major League Soccer wants St. Louis. Mm-hmm. I think they see it as having Kansas City and Chicago and that this would be great for you know, rivalries and creating some excitement and just I think that they definitely want it.
That coupled with the city's history in the sport is another reason why I think they want to be here. But you're right, with the National Geographic rivalries, they'd really like to come here.
Mm-hmm. We've had a note here from Alex Hoyer, the producer, saying SDLFC has played the entire season there in Fenton since the flood.
Yeah.
Okay, but there again, none of us here really knows about that. So that kind of tells me something about soccer in St. Louis. We have a caller who wants to get into the conversation. Let's bring in Gene calling from St. Louis. Gene, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to add a note about sustainability as a movement in the business sector. We just completed a seventh year of the St. Louis Green Business Challenge here in our area. That is a partnership between the Missouri Botanical Garden and the St. Louis Regional Chamber. I manage that program for the garden. And although all of the work that is being done in greening up day-to-day operations and feeding that knowledge and feeding that planning and budgeting know-how up into things like corporate social responsibility and global reporting, all of that is being done here voluntarily because we don't have the cost-saving drivers, we don't have the regulatory drivers that you see in the business sector in places like California or Boston, and yet we have a really robust sustainability movement from the U.S. Green Building Council and the business, the building industry companies to the general Green Business Challenge. It was business leadership significantly last December that motivated the U.S. to sign on to a climate protection agreement for the first time. And even though we may very likely see a huge downward trend in that level of awareness and that level of progressiveness nationally, I frankly am looking to business and their savvy, their know-how, and the kinds of requirements like the Global Reporting Initiative that has integrated sustainable thinking, practice, budget, policies into the business sector. And we have a huge amount of that going on here in St. Louis.
Gene, thank you so much for the call. Nice to talk to you again. Gene Ponzi, well, I recognize that voice.
Thanks. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Any comment to Gene's remarks?
Well, I think it makes a I think businesses are on board with saving energy and doing green practices. Absolutely. You know, when Gene was talking, though, I was also thinking about Peabody Energy, which is sort of a little bit, you know, not to say that they're not for sustainability within, you know, their own business, but, you know, the coal industry and the real downward trend we saw over the last few years, which landed the big, big coal companies in bankruptcy, including Arch and Peabody, in this over the last year. And, you know, we have had a sea change. We have President-elect Trump. I think we're going to have a lot of different policies when it comes to coal and to clean air. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Peabody is going to be they expect to emerge from bankruptcy this spring, second quarter.
Spring. Yeah.
And they just came out with their reorganization plan. They filed that with the federal bankruptcy court last week. It was in December, at least.
It's the season.
Yes, it's going so fast. And so they're shedding $5 billion in debt. They're going to basically their shareholders aren't going to come out so well in this. They're not going to be getting much of anything. But you know, coal prices are rebounding somewhat.
And in there too, and in the documents they filed last week, there was an interesting line about natural gas is improving, I believe is how they phrased it, which
means natural gas's prices are going up and, yeah, and making
so
it better for
coal. So becomes more attractive once again because of that. But it was an interesting phrase. It's almost like we don't want to offend that sector of the industry considering what we're going through right now, so we'll be selective about it. But that was one thing that really jumped out at me in those documents that were filed with the SEC last week.
I've got to wind this down. We've only got about a minute left. Very quickly, Wayne and Maria, what are you looking for in 2017? Anything in particular?
Well, a couple of things really stand out with me. How this Bayer-Monsanto thing shakes out, I don't think it's a fait accompli, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what they have to do to possibly get regulatory approval, or if the regulators just say, no, it's just not the right time in the overall agricultural sector for this to happen. And also something we haven't talked about, but and this may be a personal thing, but I think it's interesting. Three major commercial radio companies in this country, two of them are facing a massive debt load that could explode in their face at any time. Another one that's been in the radio business for a while has taken significant steps to get out. It'll be interesting to see the impact on the radio sector in the next 12 months.
We want radio to survive,
yes,
obviously.
Absolutely.
Maria, anything come to mind in 15 seconds?
I would say that it's going to be interesting. We didn't get to, but the fact that we've got Centene that's really going to be expanding in Clayton. We've got a lot of big development projects. The City Foundry we talked about. Also, SLU is building a new hospital, mm-hmm. $550 million. That's SSM. So those projects I will definitely be keeping an eye on.
All right. Lots to keep you busy for the next 12 months. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
And thank you, Wayne, for being with us. And this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.